Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Canto 7, Chapter 3, Text 21, Hiranyakasipu's plan to become immortal. Can someone lead the Sanskrit? Sadami asura pungala. Darshanam na palam mama. Tatastara tiyasarva. Sadami asura pungava. Matasya tiya yamatasya. Lamara. Translation. O best of the Asuras, for this reason I am now prepared to give you all benedictions according to your desire. I belong to the celestial world of demigods who do not die like human beings. Therefore, although you are subject to death, your audience with me will not go in vain. Purport. It appears that human beings and asuras are subject to death, whereas the demigods are not. The demigods who reside with Lord Brahma in Satyaloka go to Vaikuntha Loka in their present bodily constructions at the time of the dissolution. Therefore, although Hiranyakasipu had undergone severe austerities, Lord Brahma predicted that he had to die. He could not become immortal or even gain equal status with the demigods. The great austerities and penances he had performed for so many years could not give him protection from death. This was foretold by Lord Brahma. Translation again. So I want everyone to chant loudly with me these prayers. Om Jnana Timurandasya Ganangana Salakaya Chaksurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. The translation again. O best of Asuras, for this reason I am now prepared to give you all benedictions according to your desire. I belong to the celestial world of demigods who do not die like human beings. Therefore, although you are subject to death, your audience with me will not go in vain. So it's nice to be back in Chaupati. I had a wonderful time last year, and I was waiting all year to come back. And it's very enlivening for me, and I gain a lot of spiritual strength from just being here in your association. And I'm not at all qualified to speak in front of so many other qualified Vaishnavas, but I've been asked to speak, and I know that Srila Prabhupada would want me to say something, and anyone can say something about Krishna according to their own realizations. But I am embarrassed just to be here because, I've not been steady in my devotional service throughout the years. But I know it's for my own purification that I have to, speak something. And I seek your blessings that I can assist in fulfilling the pure desire of Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas to spread Krishna consciousness or to spread love of Krishna. So I know that to sit on the Vyasasan, you're supposed to be a representative of Vyasadev. That's a very heavy thing to do. And I hope that I just repeat and I don't get in the way. Actually, I told last year in Puniyatra, I told about this dream that I had, where Srila Prabhupada came to me in a dream. Actually, it started out where I was just walking on the road and I saw an empty building, but I could understand that it was a temple. And this is just a dream. But I could understand it was a temple. And there was a big tree full of leaves outside the temple. And all the leaves fell off the tree. And then a wind came and blew all the leaves away. But then I went up into the temple to see, you know, where are all the devotees? But no one was there. And then I looked out from the door and a car pulled up. And Srila Prabhupada was driving the car. And Srila Prabhupada got out of the car, walking with his cane. And he had a very serious and stern look on his face. And I was thinking, wow, Srila Prabhupada has come to the temple, but nobody else is here. You know, what am I going to do? And Srila Prabhupada came walking up the steps. And I said, oh, you know, come on in, Srila Prabhupada. I was trying to think how to greet him. Because usually whenever Srila Prabhupada would come to a temple, there'd be like a huge kirtan. They would wash his feet, you know, showering flower petals. It'd be a very festive occasion. But in my dream, I was just there alone with Srila Prabhupada. So I said, you know, please come in. I was looking around. It was an empty room with just one chair. I said, Srila Prabhupada, you know, please sit down in this chair. And you know, every time I would look at Srila Prabhupada, he would have a very serious look on his face, very serious. And at one point, I just blurted out, Srila Prabhupada, I'm the only one here. You know, I'm just doing whatever I can. And he looked at me very seriously and he said, don't get in my way. And I woke up. And it kind of freaked me out at first. Srila Prabhupada so seriously saying, don't get in my way. I was thinking, should I just bloop and stay out of the way altogether? Maybe it's my destiny that I'm going to hinder, you know, Lord Chaitanya's movement in some way. And it disturbed me. But then I started to think more about what actually it means to not get in the way. And my understanding is that it's to become a transparent via media and to just repeat and represent the spiritual master, but not try to, you know, make up anything or invent your own way, but just simply become a humble servant and follow the previous acharyas. So that's my understanding of not getting in the way. I'll just try to, and I'm conscious of that now, of not being in the way. When I was at the Puniyatra and listening to Radhanath Maharaj give class one morning, he was speaking about chanting japa, and he was talking about how you have to pronounce it with the lips and hear it with your ears, each syllable of the Maha Mantra, but it should come from the heart. And that gave me a lot of strength, the days at Puniyatra and also this morning when I'm trying to concentrate on chanting my japa. And I can understand that, even though I've heard that many times before, just by hearing it from someone who has purity, it actually affects the heart, and you get some strength from that. So, and conversely, it says that milk touched by the lips of a serpent has poisonous effects. So we should be very careful not to hear from non-devotees about topics of spiritual life. And it also, you know, I know myself that if I'm not pure, if I'm not living a pure life, then my words, they don't have much potency. Even though I may say, you know, chant Hare Krishna and be happy, it doesn't have the same potency as Srila Prabhupada or Srila Radhanath Maharaj or, you know, all of you. So it's a very serious mission that we've been given by the previous acharyas, by Srila Prabhupada. It's their pure desire to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. And we can help in some way. That's our fortune. Srila Prabhupada, he was very compassionate. That was one of the things that I appreciated in Srila Prabhupada. This is compassion. You know, he just came to give Krishna consciousness. And even though people didn't want it, he had that pure love in his heart that he gave it. And somehow or other, this whole movement has grown from Srila Prabhupada's compassion. And there are so many examples, even this verse that we're talking about, Lord Brahma, who is the head of our Sampradaya, or we're in the Brahma Madhya Gaudiya Sampradaya. So Lord Brahma is a pure devotee, and we even here we see that at the time of dissolution, they go to Vaikuntha. The demigods, they don't die in the ordinary way like we do. And of course, we should understand that no one can go back home, back to Godhead, unless they're completely pure. They have no material desires at all, that they only want to serve Krishna. But Hiranyakasipu, Lord Brahma is telling Hiranyakasipu, even though he performed all these austerities and he wanted to become immortal, it wasn't going to happen because he didn't have that service attitude, that pure devotional service. And that's the only way that one can go back home, back to Godhead, and be immortal. But Brahma is being very compassionate here to Hiranyakasipu. He saw him performing these austerities. He came to him. He offered him whatever benediction that he wanted. It was out of his compassion. And just the other day, I was reading in the Krishna book about Narada Muni. He was traveling and he came upon Nalikavira and Manigriva, and they were intoxicated, sporting with young girls in a lake. And just Narada Muni's from his heart, out of compassion, he cursed them. But his curse was such a benediction that he saw that they were puffed up due to excessive wealth. And usually wealth causes one to become puffed up. When you can do whatever you want from lots of wealth, you have a facility to do whatever you want. And you can do many sinful activities for sense gratification. Or, of course, you can perform great service to the Vaishnavas and spreading Krishna consciousness, like we see Krishna Chan and Nathaji. They've been given wealth and they're using it very properly. But usually, and also for ourselves, we should understand that wealth is an impediment, and it's very difficult to become Krishna conscious if we have wealth. So usually Krishna keeps devotees in a poor condition. That's his mercy. And just like Narada, he cursed these Nali Kuvera and Mani Griva, who were the sons of Kuvera, out of his compassion, so that they would take their birth in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, and they would get the opportunity of seeing Krishna personally. And then, of course, they become purified. I don't know, I'm not used to speaking so much classes, although I'm very much impressed by Mahamuni. I'm staying with him now, and his example of everybody he meets, he starts preaching to, and he's just like an ocean of nectar. He just keeps going and going, and I hope to capture some of that from him. But I don't have it yet. Also today is the appearance day of Lochan Das Thakur, who was a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya. I forget his spiritual master, I think Chuck Narhari, something like that. But his spiritual master asked him to write about the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. So one day he just sat down on a rock and he started writing on a piece of bark the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And of course that book is a very famous book, Chaitanya Mangala. And he didn't consider himself a great scholar or a great preacher, but he considered himself a musician. And just in that capacity, he tried to serve the devotees and push on the Krishna consciousness movement. And of course, that book is very famous, Chaitanya Mangala. Actually, when he wrote it, Vrindavan Das Thakur had also written a book about the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And excuse me, it had the same name. It was called Chaitanya Mangala. So there was two books, and they were both called Chaitanya Mangala. And then all the the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they got together and had a meeting, and they decided to change Vrindavan Das Thakur's book to Chaitanya Bhagavat and keep Lochan's book the same name, Chaitanya Mangala. And Lochan Das Thakur, when he was young, I forget how old, but he was like a teenager, and he had an arranged marriage. He actually got married. Actually, I'm not sure, but anyways, it was arranged. Somehow, he was arranged to be married, but he went away to study at his guru. And he went and studied many years, but then, you know, the father was thinking, wow, he's been away for so long, you know, he should come back and enter into this household life. So he decided, okay, he's going to come back to his village, and he was coming back to the village, and he met some Mataji at the well. And he said, oh, Mataji, can you please tell me where such and such house is, where he had to go? And she told him where the house was. And he went to the house. This is, you know, his bride's house. And he was received well. And then he came to know that the person at the well that he had asked directions from was the person that he was getting married to. And so he said, no, actually, I've addressed you as Mataji, and therefore I cannot marry you. And so he didn't get married. I'm sure there are many other stories, but I don't really know much of the pastimes of Lochan. But usually, you know, I can tell some stories of Srila Prabhupada or some of the Vaishnavas. So I guess at this point I'll ask for some questions of how I can serve you. Are there any questions?
Can you tell us something about your first meeting with Srila Prabhupada and how you got attracted to this process of Krishna consciousness?
Okay. I mean, I told the story in Pune, the first time that I met Srila Prabhupada. But if you like, I'll tell it again. And I met the devotees in 1970, first time in the summer of 1970 at a rock festival. And then they, in the fall of 1970, they came to the town where I was living in Massachusetts, north of Boston, and they gave an engagement. And I was very moved by the purity of the devotees. And they seemed so happy together. They seemed like one big family. And I really wanted to be part of that. And I didn't really understand much of the philosophy. It was just the point that the material world is temporary, you know, everything that you see is temporary, but who we really are is a spirit soul, and that's eternal. So if we are eternal, then we should do something eternal. We should, and devotional service is eternal. And that just made so much sense to me that I wanted to, you know, be with the devotees and try to do something that's eternal. Somehow I was inspired. And so I moved into the temple and performed devotional service and heard from the devotees. Back then, there were so many stories that the devotees were talking about Srila Prabhupada. This is in Boston in 1970. There was one where Srila Prabhupada was in Boston and he was just standing in front of the deities. They had very little Radhakrishna deities. They're actually about this big, the Radhakrishna deities, little brass deities. And Srila Prabhupada was standing in front of the deities one day with his hands folded, and there were some tears coming out of his eyes. And he turned to the devotees and he said, "I am simply praying to Radha and Krishna that I don't fall into Maya." And I've always remembered that, and when Niranjana Maharaj was speaking yesterday so wonderfully, and he said that he asked Radhanath Maharaj, you know, how he gets his strength, and he said, you know, from praying. And I remembered, you know, that Srila Prabhupada also prayed. And we should also try to pray like that, even though we may not be on the same platform. It's purifying to pray in the footsteps and follow the example of the previous acharyas. So there's always, you know, really nice Prabhupada katha going on. Everybody was very focused about Srila Prabhupada and doing their service and trying to please Srila Prabhupada. There was a morning walk where the temple at first was at 95, I think it was Glendale Avenue in Alston. and Prabhupada stayed there. And they used to, just up the street in Brighton, there was a park, and Srila Prabhupada used to walk in the park. And it's a nice park, but on one side there's a hill. And one day Srila Prabhupada said, this is the proper way to walk up a hill. And he walked like zigzag up the hill. And he was, you know, Prabhupada was teaching in every aspect of his life. He even taught us how to walk up a hill, you know, by going like zigzag. just some of the, you know, these stories that stick out. There was a devotee, Nanda Kishore, and he was on a walk with Srila Prabhupada, and one time he asked Srila Prabhupada, does Mother Yasoda know? No, he said, does Krishna know what Mother Yasoda is going to do before she does it? And Prabhupada said, yes. And then there was silence, and they kept walking. And there was silence for a while. Then Srila Prabhupada said, don't think like that. And everybody kind of stopped. And he said it again, don't think like that. And then he said, don't think that if you knew what was going to happen in the future, that you would be bored. That if Krishna knows what's going to happen in the future, he becomes bored. He said, don't think like that. And it was a very dynamic temple. ISKCON Press was there. So many great devotees. Satsarup Maharaj was the temple president. He was a householder at the time. He was so enthusiastic and so sincere in his service. He would never just walk up the stairs. He'd always run up the stairs two steps at a time. And he was the temple president. He was in charge of ISKCON Press. He was GBC. He was editing Srila Prabhupada's books and an editor of Back to Godhead. He was doing so much service and so enthusiastic. And he acted like a father to me because I was, when I joined, I was only 16 years old. And he helped me immensely. I owe, you know, a great debt to him for helping me in my spiritual life in the early days. But finally, you know, after serving Srila Prabhupada's mission and the devotees in Boston, at one point, I was recommended along with some other devotees to get initiated, and they wrote a letter to Srila Prabhupada asking if he would accept us as his disciple. And he said, in the letter he said, yes, you know, I'll accept these devotees. And usually you would get recommended, then the temple president would perform a fire sacrifice if Prabhupada wasn't there. And so anyways, in the letter Prabhupada said, yes, I'll accept these devotees as my disciples, but I'll be coming to Boston, I think he said in April, I'll be coming to Boston in April so I can perform the initiations personally at that time, so I'll do that when I come there. And he said, and tell them in the meantime to chant hard. So we were just ecstatic, you know, expecting Srila Prabhupada to come in April. But April came, and then it went, and Srila Prabhupada hadn't come yet because he was preaching in other parts of the world. But finally, Srila Prabhupada came in July of 1971 in the summer. And, you know, we were just so much in anticipation. The whole temple, we were trying to fix it up, make it clean, get everything ready for Srila Prabhupada. And we were very poor. We were, you know, it was a big temple because ISKCON Press used to be there, but they had moved, and it was just a handful of new devotees, plus Satsarup Maharaj. And the Brahmachari Ashram, we were fixing it up for Srila Prabhupada's room. We were painting it. Painted a nice dark blue on the walls with white trim and a little gold border, and painted it the floor white. And there was another room right next door that we were fixing for his servants that came with him also. And there was this one elderly gentleman. His name was Leon. And he was about the same age as Srila Prabhupada. And he convinced Satsarup Maharaj that, you know, the Boston temple wasn't good enough for Srila Prabhupada to stay in, that Srila Prabhupada was Jagat Guru, and he should be offered the best. But we were so poor, that was the only thing that we could offer him is what we had at the temple. But he volunteered to rent the best hotel in Boston, which was the Four Seasons Hotel, and he rented the penthouse suite so that Srila Prabhupada would have a very nice and opulent place to stay. And the devotees went there, and they cleaned it, and they hung pictures of Krishna on the wall and put fresh flowers there and, you know, made it ready for Srila Prabhupada's arrival. So the first time that I personally saw Srila Prabhupada was at the airport in Boston, and we had all gone. We had one van, an old Ford Econoline van, and we all got into that van, and they drove us to the airport, dropped us off, and the person went and parked the car. And we were having a huge kirtan behind some glass, waiting for Prabhupada to come. And, you know, the plane landed, and it taxied in, and it came up to where it was going to unload. And in those days, everybody just went down like some stair. They pushed, rolled some stairs up, and people would get down and then walk across the runway. And we're having this big kirtan, you know, just waiting for Srila Prabhupada to come out. And everybody just kept coming out, and we're just waiting for Prabhupada. And it seemed like, you know, he, the very last person to come out was Srila Prabhupada. First, I think Krundar and Aravinda, his servant, was traveling with him. They came out of the plane. And then Srila Prabhupada came out. And I can remember all the devotees just like in complete bliss saying, "Jai Srila Prabhupada." And Srila Prabhupada looked right up to where the kirtan was behind the glass. And he looked right at the kirtan. And as soon as we saw Srila Prabhupada come out and look, we paid our obeisances. And Srila Prabhupada came down off the airplane. He came into the airport. And we were having just a blissful kirtan. And Prabhupada was smiling very much. Satsarup put some garland on him. And then Prabhupada very majestically walked through the airport, and we were having a big rousing kirtan with him. And then they had a car waiting for Srila Prabhupada out at the curb at Logan Airport. Srila Prabhupada got into the car and then, you know, drove away to the temple. And I know I myself and a lot of other devotees, we were just in such anxiety. And Srila Prabhupada had driven away to go to the temple, and we were left at the airport. And, you know, the driver of the van was also there at the kirtan. And, you know, we wanted to get in and go with Srila Prabhupada, but we had to wait for him to go to the parking garage, you know, get the van out, come and pick us up. And eventually, when we finally got back to the temple, Srila Prabhupada was sitting on the Vyasasan. It was a very rickety kind of Vyasasan, just with these four legs, piece of plywood, some kind of like pedals in the back of it. I had the opportunity to make it under the direction of Gauri Devi Dasi, who was the head pujari at the time. And it had a big, had four poles in the corner with a canopy on top of it. And Srila Prabhupada sat down in the Vyasasana, and he was giving a lecture. And we got there, the lecture was more than halfway done. And I was mad at myself that I had missed, you know, Srila Prabhupada's arrival and his lecture. But anyways, that was the first time that I had personally heard Srila Prabhupada speaking. And I can remember is thinking, wow, I'm actually finally, you know, getting to hear Srila Prabhupada say something in person. And it was a little hard for me to hear, but I can remember, I don't remember exactly what he said, but I just had the impression that it sounded just like, you know, the tapes that I'd been listening to for so many months. And he was saying the same thing. So then he finished his lecture, and he got up off the Vyasasan, and he went into his room that we had fixed for him. And this room was maybe like 10 foot by 12 foot. And we had set up, it was a little bigger than this, a little lectern. It was made out of plywood painted yellow, and with some foam cushions on the floor, one for his back, one for him to sit on. And Srila Prabhupada sat in there and gave just a brief darshan to the devotees. And then, because it was in the evening, Satsarup Maharaj said, Srila Prabhupada, it's getting late, and you know, we've rented a hotel for you to stay in. And Srila Prabhupada's eyes got very big, and he said, hotel? He said, I'm not going. And then he quoted a verse, and he said, the English, he said, the country is in the mode of goodness, the city is in the mode of passion, but a hotel is simply a brothel. He said, I'm not going. But then he said, but the temple is Vaikuntha. He said, I'll stay in the temple. And, of course, the devotees were very happy. And he stayed in that small room, the whole time that he stayed, two and a half days. He just stayed in that room. They put a foam mat down on the floor for Srila Prabhupada to sleep on. But he was very happy to stay in the temple. Of course, that night they ran back to the hotel and they took all the pictures off the wall and they took all the flowers out and they brought them back to the temple to decorate Prabhupada's room with a little nicer. But that was my first time seeing Srila Prabhupada. And all the brahmacharis had to sleep in the basement because Prabhupada was staying where the brahmacharis usually stay. And I can remember it was late at night, and I was just finally lying down to sleep and just remembering, you know, and just really rejoicing in the fact that I had just seen, you know, Srila Prabhupada personally, and that he was just right above me. I was sleeping in the basement, but he was in the, you know, the room sleeping right above me, and that he was actually here now. But I at the same time, I got the very strong impression that Srila Prabhupada had always been there at the temple, even though he was there personally. It was the same feeling that he had always been there. You know, because we were serving him. So that was the first time that I saw Srila Prabhupada. Are there any other questions? Well, just like how I said that dream that I had, I think about that a lot. And also when I was doing my service, trying to make some deities, I also feel like I have to stay out of the way. And especially with Lord Nrisimhadev, especially when I see him now, I don't think that I made him, but that he appeared and he wanted to he wanted to appear. And actually, like, I was in the way, but somehow I had to purify myself enough to allow him to appear. So it wasn't really anything that I did, but somehow or other, he appeared. Any other questions? We end at 9, right? And maybe one more question. No? Okay. Well, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.